Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
You're very welcome along to the Big Red Bench, the show that would have to play Mariah Carey on repeat for an hour if we could get away with it in the middle of November. Rory and Ryan here with you until 7 o'clock this evening. A lot to discuss on the show. It's been a hectic day. South Africa have won their third Rugby World Cup. It's been a busy afternoon in the Premier League. Wrap up all the day's action as Liverpool left it late and Man City came from behind to win as well. Also going to talk to Moss Finn about the Rugby World Cup final today. And we'll hear from Razzy Rasmus, former Munster coach and now World Cup winning coach as well. We're going to talk darts as well tonight. Corkman John O'Shea was crowned BDO Masters champion last Sunday night. We have an in-depth conversation with John about that and what the future holds for him. You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Glad you could join us on this Saturday evening. A lot to discuss over the next hour. If you'd like to get in touch, you can text us 086 8104 106. You can tweet us as well at Big Red Bench. With the competition on the show tonight, we're giving you, or your kids more likely, the chance to be a mascot for the Republic of Ireland under-17s. Who play in Cork three times in the very near future. They're playing in Turner's Cross for three games in their Euro Championship qualifiers. We'll give you details on that and how your child could be a mascot for the boys in green. Give you details on that in just a little bit. Going to wrap up all today's action though, and for that we hand you over to Sniffles McGinty.
Cheers, Roy. I'm not using the word man flu just yet, but it's
not that bad, is it?
It's not that bad. I'm still standing, so we'll see how it...
Oh, my thoughts and prayers, my friend.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Hopefully it doesn't develop into full-blown man flu.
Hopefully. I wish people could see the sarcasm in your eyes there.
Like, yeah, as you can tell, I'm really concerned about you and your sniffles.
It looks very genuine, yeah.
go on.
Cheers, Roy. We'll kick it off with the Premier League. Liverpool grabbing a late winner against Aston Villa to preserve their 6-point advantage at the top of the table. Sadio Mane scoring in stoppage time. They came from behind to beat Aston Villa 2-1. They weren't the only ones either. Nearest challengers Man City also had to overturn a deficit. They defeated Southampton 2-1. Arsenal meanwhile were held to a 1-1 draw at home to Wolves. Newcastle held off a fight back from West Ham to win 3-2 in East London. Elsewhere today, Sheffield United beat Burnley 3-0 with all the goals coming in the first half. Brighton now up to 8th place in the table. They beat Norwich 2-0, while Bournemouth were 1-0 winners over Man United in the day's early game. Winless Watford currently in action against Chelsea, 31 minutes on the clock there. It's Chelsea 1, Watford 0, courtesy of a gorgeous volley from Tammy Abraham in the 5th minute. And we'll have full reports on all those games coming up shortly. Now, a little more locally, Cork City boss Neil Fenn has appointed City legend Joe Gamble as his assistant manager. Former Irish international, had previously been working with Waterford and Limerick, and Gamble has won the league, the FAI Cup and the Satanta Sports Cup with the Rebel Army. He told our own Colm O'Sullivan he's delighted to be working with Fenn.
Well, you played together at Cork City. You were business together in Sighton Town, had a shop for a while in Sighton Town as well. Yeah. So you're obviously friends and you've known each other for years. So it'll be nice to work together now as manager and assistant manager.
Yeah. Look, we're good mates for a long time now. We have totally different personalities in a good way. And I think that's what's going to kind of complement us working together in this going forward in this adventure. But look, we're very enthusiastic. We're hard workers. I know Neil has his own way of doing things. I have my own way of doing things. But, we just can't wait to get going, over to be honest with you. For me, I'm delighted. And that probably doesn't even do it justice to be back at Cork and they get involved again. And hopefully my experience as a player can rub off on the players we have, and we can gather some momentum pre-season, get in some new players, get bums in seats and kind of start rocking again, really.
Yeah, fantastic appointment there by Neil Fenn to appoint Joe Gamble as his assistant manager. That interview in full is available on the Cork Red FM Facebook page if you want to check that up. But yeah, certainly a very astute appointment, I think, by Neil Fenn.
Cheers, Roar. Moving on to the Rugby England head coach Eddie Jones giving nothing away about his future in the aftermath of today's 32-12 defeat to South Africa in the Rugby World Cup final. It was the second biggest winning margin in a World Cup final. Jones feels like his players will be kicking stones for 4 years after their loss to the Springboks in Yokohama. Former Japan and Australia boss was asked about his plans after the game.
The only thing we're worried about now is having a few beers. And that's the only thing we will worry about. And then after we have a few beers today, we'll probably have a few more beers tomorrow. And then probably Monday. And then maybe we have to pull up stumps.
Yeah, not a bad plan, is it?
No, not a bad plan. Definitely not for the short term, anyway. There's also action in the Pro 14 this evening. Munster are in Wales to face Cardiff Blues. That kicks off in the Cardiff Arms Park at 7:35. Connacht, meanwhile, currently in action against the Ospreys. It's currently half-time there, and Connacht in control, leading 17 points to 3. In Gaelic games in the Intermediate Football Championship, the final takes place this evening. That sees Gabriel Rangers and Knocknagri go head-to-head in Páirc Uaireann, where throw-in is at 7 o'clock. Action in basketball also this evening in the Women's Super League. Father Matthews hosting DCU Mercy. That kicked off at 5 o'clock. And at halftime, it's DCU Mercy who led by 42 points to 35. A little later on, Ambassador UCC Glanmire visit Liffey Celtics at 7. While in Men's Super League, CNS Neptune hosts Kilester at 7 o'clock. In hockey today, the Irish women's hockey team can take one step closer to the Tokyo 2020 Olympics tonight. They face Canada at Energia Park in Donnybrook in the first leg of their Tokyo 2020 playoff. Shirley McKay is set to make her 300th appearance for the country and making her the most captained Irish sportswoman in history, while Ireland's Nikki Daly says they're ready to challenge the best.
The progression of the team over the years, we definitely are playing like world-class hockey at the minute. And so even though we didn't make it in 2015, I actually think it's been sort of the foundations for, you know, the progression that we've had to get to this point today. And I think the team is at its strongest it's ever been since I've been in it anyway.
Yeah, tip-off tonight is at 7 o'clock. Best of luck to the Green Machine tonight, and hopefully no terrible umpiring decisions which cost the men's team last weekend.
Yeah, 100%. Finally for now, Roar, just a quick look ahead to Katie Taylor. She could become the third ever Irish boxer to win titles at two weight divisions tonight. The undisputed lightweight champion faces Christina Linardatu for the WBO super lightweight title. It's in Manchester. And Katie Taylor speaking on Sky Sports News ahead of her world title final tonight.
Yeah, I just have to step in the scales, really. I don't have to actually diet this week, which makes 5 weeks a bit more easier and a bit more enjoyable. But I'm still very much focused on the job as well, and I can't relax too much. I have to stay focused, I have to stay sharp this week, but I'm feeling great at the moment, and I'm feeling very strong to wait.
It would be an historic achievement if you were to win a world title at a second weight division. What are the big challenges that come with stepping up?
Well, obviously, Christina is a big, big puncher. She's very powerful. She's very explosive. So that in itself is a big challenge. But I am well prepared for this fight. I've been, as I said, I've had a really long camp for this fight, and they are the bigger girls now. They're the stronger girls as well. But I've been getting fantastic sparring over these last few months. I've got plenty of rounds in the bank over the last few months as well, and I'm feeling ready for Saturday.
Yeah, really looking forward to that fight tonight. Katie Taylor is box office. I just love watching Katie Taylor
fight. Oh, yeah, same. I will 100%. I think it's kicking off around 9, but she should be actually in the ring for around half 10, is it?
As far as I know, it'll be about 10-ish. Tune in from 9:30. I think you should be all right, but really looking forward to watching Katie fight and hopefully add another belt to her collection as well. QGA UFC night tonight as well. One of the fights I've been looking forward to most over the last couple of years. I haven't looked forward to a fight as much as suggests Jorge Masvidal against Nate Diaz, which goes head-to-head Madison Square Garden tonight. So really looking forward to that. We'll have plenty of MMA on the show tomorrow as well, because Cage Warriors is back in Cork after a lengthy absence. We'll be talking to MMA Cork's Jack McGuire and John Mitchell as they prepare to make their pro debuts. That'll be on the show tomorrow evening. Right, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we have a competition on the show tonight. If you would like your child to be a mascot for one of the Ireland under-17 games at Turner's Cross, which are happening the week after next. So Ireland playing Andorra on Tuesday the 12th, they're playing Montenegro Friday the 15th, then Israel on Monday the 18th, all those games taking place at Turner's Cross. If you'd like your child to be a mascot for one of the games, text in your name and address, which game you prefer your child to be the mascot at. And the answer to this very simple question: who is the current Ireland under-17 head coach? Who is the current Ireland under-17 head coach? 086-8104-106. 086-8104-106. And you could be, your child could be the mascot for the boys in green, walking out with the boys in green at Turner's Cross. 086-8104-106. Who is the current Ireland under-17 head coach? I need your name and address, and the game you prefer your child to be the mascot at. Alright, really looking forward to those games at Turner's Cross. Should be an absolutely cracking occasion. We are going to wrap up the day's Premier League action. It's certainly a lot to talk about. We won't rib Ryan too much about Arsenal throwing away the lead against Wolves. We'll get to that report in just a little bit, but we have to start with Liverpool. Not at their best today. at all, they have still gotten all 3 points against Aston Villa, but they left it late. Tom Gill.
Aston Villa 1, Liverpool 2. So the league leaders have had to come from behind to snatch all 3 points in the dying stages. Sadio Mane it was, back to goal, running away from goal with the header, which nestled into the back bottom right-hand corner in added time. Villa were ahead in the first half, courtesy of Trezeguet. Liverpool had a goal disallowed for offside, but the equaliser came in the second half from Andy Robertson. The pressure's been relentless. This is what potential Premier League winners do. They come from behind to snatch victory. Full time, Aston Villa 1, Liverpool 2.
That is the big question. I mean, like, it's always said that the sign of a good team is you get all 3 points, you're not playing well.
Yeah.
Liverpool are doing that. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of talk like this, that might stop, because you can only ride your luck for so long. But I definitely think there's something about this Liverpool team this year. Haven't been playing well, still 6 points there at the top.
100%, yeah. And you kind of saw it last year as well. They kind of had a bit of luck too. You saw a lot of kind of late winners like that again. But I mean, today, like, a lot of people were kind of saying the last few weeks, is it written in the stars? Is this their year? And I was thinking, it's way too early. Will you calm down?
I think they're going to win the league.
But do you know what? Today, this result, I really feel like might be kind of like that turn of the corner where you think, yeah, they actually probably will, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, they've proven now many a time, and today was no other way, that they can play poorly, but like you say, keep the unbeaten run going. So so
Sadio Mane with the winner in the 94th minute. He said they never doubted they could get the win.
I believe my teammate, and we have a good team. I think this happens all the time, I can say, at the moment. So I think it's always for us to push as a team and to keep believing until the end. I think today was not our best performance, but at least I think we deserve the 3 points.
Yeah, so that's all 3 points for Liverpool. So it's as you were at the top of the table. Man City had to work hard, though, to beat Southampton today. Darren Stanage is at the Etihad.
Manchester City come from behind to beat stubborn Southampton 2-1 at the Etihad. Ward-Prowse followed up Edison's spilling of Armstrong's shot. That was them in front at half-time. In fact, it was the 73rd minute when Sergio Aguero fired home Walker's cross with their first attempt on target. The hoist went for the winner. Bernardo Silva, Kevin De Bruyne firing wide, and with relentless pressure and 2 minutes left, Kyle Walker smashed home McCarthy's punch to win it for City. City 2, Southampton 1.
As you were at the top of the table, it's going to be between the two of them. I mean, like, you can't maybe see Chelsea riding on. I mean, like, I know they're, as things stand, they're 8 points off Liverpool if they get that win away to Watford. But it's going to be Liverpool and Manchester City again.
100%, yeah. It's a two-horse race, 100%. There's no other way. Just, like, a quick mention for Southampton there. Off the back of a 9-0 defeat at home to Leicester City last week, led Man City for 60 minutes today, which I reckon was probably the most they've been led by in quite a while in the Premier League. You know, like, that's no easy feat at all, to go to the Etihad the week later and to hold that lead until the 70th minute. You know, it obviously went went Scaway's form then, but I mean, that's no easy.
Imagine defeat. Picking yourself back up after a 9-0 defeat, and then you're looking, we've got the champions now. I mean, what do we do?
Twice. They had him in the Carabao Cup during the week as well. Do you know what I
mean? Actually, speaking of the Carabao Cup, it was great to see Caoimhín Kelleher make his Liverpool debut during the week.
Yeah.
It was a roller coaster of a game.
It was a brilliant game. Kieran texted me halfway through and he said, "What is going on here?" So I think that was when the ninth goal went in. He said, "What's going on?" But fair play to Caoimhín. He stopped a good penalty from Danny Ceballos to send Liverpool through, and it was just, fair play to him. He turned to the cop end and kind of gave it the old kind of, he'll never forget that night.
No, he'll never forget his Anfield debut for the Reds. But a fantastic congratulations to Caoimhín. I'm sure everyone at Ringman Rangers very, very proud of him as well. We'll talk about Arsenal now, and they threw away a win today. Andrew Cheel.
Arsenal 1, Wolves 1. Arsenal ahead totally against the run of play midway through the first half. Aubameyang, a simple side foot finish from a clever short corner. Wolves had by then made and missed a handful of chances, but they continued to trouble the home defence, and 13 minutes from time, Jimenez headed home at the far post. Moutinho's looping cross to punish a sleeping defence and give his side a deserved point. Arsenal 1, Wolves 1.
So that's just 17 points now from 11 games for Arsenal. Disappointing result. Obviously, you're the resident Arsenal fan of the Big Red Bench. You were watching the game today, Minic. What did you think of it?
They never looked in control, even 1-0 up. Didn't look in control. You know, it's the I don't know. He played Ozil today for the first time in quite a while. He was kind of pressured to after he kind of gave a good performance against Liverpool. But I don't know, Roar. It's not going right for him at the minute at all.
Is Emery under pressure?
He is, I would say. He is under pressure. I'd say he's definitely under growing pressure now. His contract is only until the end of the season anyway, which kind of doesn't help things. And I'm not one for this kind of, you know, one bad run of form, get the manager out kind of a thing. I'd prefer to just give him a chance, get some stability. But yeah, like, I mean, the fans aren't happy. Do you know, like, I was watching a lot of kind of reaction videos and stuff in the last couple of weeks. Definitely after that 1-0 loss to Sheffield, people are kind of saying, "What? Like, what's he adding to the team? Nothing." Do you know, like, literally nothing. The midfield is really problematic at the minute. Obviously, you've got the whole Xhaka debacle, which, you know, that didn't even play a part in today because Xhaka wasn't even in the squad today. So, but still, it just... I don't know, like, I saw when Jimenez equalised, it was nearly just you were waiting for it, because it just waltzed right through again.
Xhaka had to release a statement yesterday, basically apologising, but not apologising at the same time.
Well, he didn't actually apologise, I don't think. He kind of just said, look, can we not just move on, kind of a thing. He didn't apologise. It obviously got to him. He kind of said that he'd been... separate to the actual abuse he got when he was actually substituted off, that he was getting a lot kind of online.
Yeah, I saw that,
and that is obviously has no place in the game at all. Like, he's just after having a baby and he's getting a lot of abuse online towards his wife and his child, which is just bang out of order, obviously.
It's only football, lads, calm down.
Exactly. Another few points dropped today for Arsenal. It's not surprising at all. They're just on a real down spiral at the minute.
All right, we are going to move on and we will talk about Sheffield United, who are having a fine season. Indeed, up to six now with a win today against Burnley. Lee Stott.
Sheffield United 3-0, a fully deserved win for the home side, who scored twice just before half time to put the game out of sight. John Lundstrom netted his second of the match in that period, both of his goals finishing off good team moves. John Fleck also fired home in what was more of an individual effort. The visitors had a VAR check for a penalty when they were 1-0 down, but it was decided the ball hitting Jack O'Connell's arm wasn't worthy of a swap. Full time, Sheffield United 3-0.
Some concern though for Ireland Cork's John Egan, substituted today after 80 minutes as he picked up an injury in that game, so hopefully he won't be too long. Got a bit of a knock, substituted, hopefully won't be or will be available for the boys in green for that Denmark game. But John Egan having an absolutely fantastic season. He is rock solid in the centre of that Sheffield United defence.
Unbelievably, 100% earned that place. He's doing great.
Yeah, fantastic to see. Brighton beating Norwich 2-0 today. Richard Newman.
Brighton are Albion 2, Norwich City now. It's finished. Three successive home wins for Graham Potter's side, and they're into the top half of the table, while the problems remain for Norwich, still in the relegation zone, 3 points from safety. But Brighton deserved this win. They dominated the game, and for the second week running, their attacking threat intensified when Leandro Trossard came on. The Belgian winger opened the scoring by converting a cross from the right to the near post, then provided a free kick from which Shane Duffy slid in to score. And for Norwich, they didn't create much apart from hitting the bar early on through Marco Sieperman. It's now 5 defeats in the last 6 games for them, but Brighton keep their momentum. It's finished Brighton 2, Norwich 0.
Newcastle scored more than one goal for the first time this season. Guy Swindles.
West Ham 2, Newcastle 3. Newcastle scoring more than one goal in a match for the first time this season. They were 2 up at half-time, headers from Clark and Fernandes. Further opportunities had been spurned and Shelby had hit the bar. He then increased the lead with a fine free kick when the keeper should have done better just at the start of the second half. West Ham got a couple back through Balbuena and a fine finish from Snodgrass, but too little, too late. West Ham 2, Newcastle 3.
And Manchester United had been on a 3-match winning run, but then they went to the Vitality. Peter Hood.
Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 0. The home side's goal drought is over, and a very valuable win indeed against the United side, whose mini revival comes crashing to ground. The game was separated by a goal by Josh King in first half stoppage time, when he turned Wan-Bissaka to drive home the only goal of the game. Bournemouth were always good value. United had plenty of the ball, but they couldn't use it, and they created very little. It's finished Bournemouth 1, Manchester United 0.
And this is the reaction of manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
When you get to places like this, you've got to take the control of the game. I thought we started really well first 15, but then lack of quality or we couldn't get a goal. And then when it becomes a game like it did, the first goal was always going to be important.
That's four league defeats now for Manchester United. They are in 10th place, just 13 points from 11 games. Their worst ever start to a Premier League campaign after 11 games. Pressure growing on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Is he going to see out the season?
Gosh, I mean, that's the question, isn't it? I don't see it. I think he'll be gone. I think he'll be the next one to go.
This side of Christmas or after?
I'd say he might get until Christmas. I'd say it could be soon after, do you know?
Looking good for Manchester United. They were all right at the start of the game, created a couple of chances. But they conceded a very, very poor goal from their point of view. Joshua King just flicking the ball over his head with Aaron Wan-Bissaka marking him and then just burying it past David De Gea. It was a really good goal, but very, very disappointing if you're a Manchester United fan.
Yeah.
So a lot to be concerned about for the Red Devils. All right, we're going to talk rugby and the World Cup final taking place today. And, of course, South Africa beating England by 20 points. Earlier on this morning in a bit of an upset, a lot of talk going into the game that England were the favourites, but a 20 points win for South Africa, who were excellent, weren't they?
Unbelievable, and what a surprise it was. Like you say, there kind of seems to have been a kind of an air of whoever takes the scalp of the All Blacks basically has their name kind of half on the trophy as it is. But I mean, do you know, that obviously didn't face South Africa too much.
It's a funny old game. Like, New Zealand hammered South Africa, and then England beat New Zealand. So you think that, but going on that form, that like England should have won. I just think maybe the win over the All Blacks just took an awful lot out of them last night.
I'd say that was exactly it. I'd say they just kind of ran out of it.
Ran out of steam a little bit. But for more on it, I spoke to our good friend, former Ireland and Munster star Moss Finn, about the game and South Africa's fantastic performance.
It was absolutely extraordinary. England were raging favourites. You know, they dismantled the All Blacks last week, and next thing they turn around against what was perceived as a much inferior team to New Zealand, and they're beaten comprehensively by a better team on the day in South Africa. It was an absolutely extraordinary result, and one that, you know, certainly the bookies didn't get it right, and that's for sure.
Certainly didn't. Tactically, where did South Africa get it right this morning?
Well, the thing I don't like, and I didn't like it about all the matches in Japan, is that I thought the standard of the actual surface of the pitches and the greasy ball, no matter, even in dry conditions, there was still a greasy ball because of condensation or whatever. I thought the actual pitch didn't help, didn't augur well for a free-flowing game. It suited a kind of a big, strong team like South Africa, who would choke the life out of the game and win ugly, as they say, you know. And that's exactly what happened. Donal Lenihan alluded to it there on the commentary initially, where South Africa got the upper hand in the scrum, and because of that, all the penalties went their way. And I felt that a lot of the penalties in the scrummage, while South Africa deserved some of them, they didn't deserve all of them. And I felt, to be fair, because I was pro-England, is that I felt the officials didn't help England in any way. I would even go so far as to say that they came down on the side of South Africa to a detrimental degree for England.
And there was a big question about South Africa's first try as well, whether or not there was a forward pass.
Well, again, Lenihan in the commentary box and Hugh Cahill said it was forward.
Yep.
I said it was forward. I thought it was forward, and they reviewed it. And your man said there wasn't enough on it to be absolutely conclusive about it being forward, and they gave the try. That was the turning point of the match. I felt England were coming back into it at that stage, but I thought it was a wrong decision, and overall I'd be very critical of the French triumvirate and the referee Garces. I felt England were very hard done by. Now, notwithstanding that, South Africa played extremely well, and they played to their strengths, and they were a little bit perhaps more dynamic than they were against Wales, but they choked the life out of England, and they choked the life out of the game. I thought it was a very poor advertisement for rugby football in that there was too much time spent on the scrummage. It kept collapsing, it kept going up, and then Garces, the ref, he has to blow something to keep the match going, and all those blows went in favour of South Africa, and that killed England. They were literally, South Africa choked the life out of them, and any bit of creativity that England tried was, they were doing it on the back foot, and you can't play rugby on the back foot.
Just on that forward pass again, Marston, like, there's 100 cameras at the ground, and they only looked at one angle of it, which I thought was a bit baffling.
'Twas, and he did it quickly. I mean, he didn't take his time about it, you know. And like Lenihan said it a few times, and he's very accurate, to be fair to him. He said from his angle, it was definitely forward. But again, we only saw the one angle. I mean, whereas before there was a knock-on there for England against the All Blacks there in one of the matches, and there was about 300 cameras had different angles on it, and one camera eventually showed that there was a slight hand knocked forward from England, and the try was disallowed against the All Blacks, if you remember. But that level of sophistication wasn't used on this occasion, and it was the turning point in the entire match.
How much did the win over New Zealand take out of England going into this game, do you think?
Well, Gatland alluded to it during the week, and he's a clever guy, as is Eddie Jones, and he said that, and I don't think he meant it badly, but he said England could find it hard to get it up 2 weeks in a row. And he was proved absolutely right. It must have taken a lot out of them. But then again, rugby football is a strange game. Psychologically, if you're not up for a match, you can't get it out there. And for them to switch on for a second week in a row, it was obvious that they couldn't do it. They couldn't play to the same level. But having said that, I felt South Africa contributed to that because they're a big, blustery side, and physically they're very hard to beat. And England just couldn't get on the forward foot, and that they seemed to lose confidence after that, and South Africans' confidence grew.
Razzy Erasmus has completely transformed the South Africa team since he arrived at the end of 2017. They were 7 in the world rankings. They were a mess. The work he's done in, less than 24 months has been sensational.
Unbelievable. I met him a few times here in Munster. He's an extremely clever man. And you might remember when he came to Munster at the time that poor Anthony Foley died, God be good to him. And I thought Erasmus showed incredible class and dignity and intelligence in handling all those situations. But that was a very rough situation to come into. He's an extremely clever man. He took over South Africa when they were an absolute basket case. You know, there was all this thing with, you know, how many different creeds you have to play. There has to be a certain amount of coloureds and whites and all this. And he handled that extremely well, you know. And he's turned them into a force. And they play a sort of straight football. There's no sophistication. They win the ball, they suck the life out of the opposition, and they kick the ball forward. So they're always on the forward foot. It's not a great style of rugby, but it's South African rugby. And he brought them back to what they know best, and that is route one. And they perfected it, and they kept perfecting it. And when push came to shove, the acid test was he delivered with that plan on the day when it mattered most, and England couldn't.
To see South Africa's captain, Masai Khalisi, lift the cup today is a huge moment for South Africa, not just the team, but as the country as a whole.
It is, and apparently it is. Things are quite volatile out there, you know, apparently. It's not the safest country in the world to live in, though. That is well documented. So it's a big boost it'll contribute very handsomely towards that. It's very important. And I'm glad they won to a degree, but I'm a bit disappointed because I felt England had the best team in it, really, but they just couldn't do it on the day. And I was very pro-England because they voted for us for the World Cup. And they came in 73 there. You saw all the documentary there last night on RT, where John Pullen led his English team out in Lansdowne Road during the Troubles. And England have always been very good to us rugby-wise and always voted for us, even though Scotland and Wales didn't. So I was very disappointed, and I was also disappointed for rugby football, because I didn't think it was a great advertisement for rugby. When you have these restarts and scrummages and collapse scrums, all that, I didn't think it was great. Last Saturday, we saw what was best in rugby football, England and New Zealand. I think today, we nearly saw what was worst. That's my opinion. Anyway.
Just another one thing on that, Razzy Erasmus. Were you surprised to hear that he'd be stepping down as a head coach?
That was always his. He perceives himself to be more of a director of rugby. He doesn't like to be the hands-on man on the pitch and that type of thing.
Yeah.
But that's what he went over there originally to do, was to be director of rugby and put a guy in as coach to run. But he obviously couldn't get someone to implement what he really wanted and then did it. Now that he has them up and running, he's going to go stand back and do the director. Perhaps he has somebody in mind who can do what he does. So it doesn't surprise me, because he's at an age, I'd say, for moving back from the hands-on stuff, and it'll suit him. And he's an extremely clever man, you know.
We haven't spoken in a while, Moss, so I have to get your thoughts on Ireland's capitulation against New Zealand. I mean, look, what was your feelings watching that match?
Very disappointed. Again, wasn't a fan of Japan. not the Japan team, but the actual Japan as a place for matches. Yeah. I had a few chats with friends of mine who were out there, and one of them had been talking to Ian Henderson after the match against Japan, and he said, don't judge us on that, please, because we just couldn't get our breath. They couldn't get their breath. They were exhausted after 20 minutes. Yeah. I mean, that has nothing to do with rugby. Notwithstanding that, notwithstanding the conditions, I felt we played extremely poorly, and I was very disappointed. The main thing being that Joe Smith didn't pick form players. All year, he goes back to the same fellas who were undercooked half the time. Murray played very little rugby. Sexton played very little rugby. Completely undercooked. And they expect them to go in then at the top level and perform like they did against fellas who were playing 10 matches in a row. I think Smith got it wrong completely by not picking form players. There's no way that Conor Murray should ever have been picked for Ireland, even on the tour. He's been poor for 12 months. He didn't make the brave calls, you know. And I think he went stale in the job. Same thing happened to Declan Kidney. It happened to Eddie Sullivan. Towards the end of their tenures, they lost the dressing room. Smith, to my mind, has lost the dressing room. He's taken his finger off the pulse. He hasn't picked form players. If you don't pick form players, you can't expect the old guys to turn up and do it all the time. New Zealand, 6 months ago, were beaten by us, or in November last year, nearly 12 months ago. And there was only six of that team played against England last Saturday. And I think only five of them played against us. They have a bigger pool of players to come in. Perhaps we don't. But at the same time, if a coach isn't prepared to change and pick form guys, you're at nothing. And that was absolutely proven.
Yeah, Andy Farrell's coming in. He's got a massive job ahead of him now, doesn't he?
He has. I like the idea of him coming in, you know, in terms of his main background is rugby league, even though he did play union for England. But if you see what Sean Edwards brought to the table with Wales down the years, he was one of the great rugby league men of all time. So I think Farrell's influence will be positive, and I don't think the players will be as cosseted under his watch. I think he'll be more demanding, he'll be more physical, and he'll want fellas to play week in, week out, like they do in the Premiership, and then play for England. Mm. Whereas here, we're reminded by Munster, they're only allowed to play a certain amount of matches. I think he might get rid of that and be a little bit more forceful and expect fellas to play more often.
All right, Moss. Overall, though, World Cup, where would you rate it? How would you rate it?
Average, overall, I think. A couple of good matches. England and the All Blacks was very good. I enjoy that. Japan were a breath of fresh air, but again, it comes down to money. It was played in Japan. I'm not too sure that was a good idea, but there's obviously commercial reasons for that, like there are commercial reasons for the World Cup going to France the next time and not here. But overall, I enjoyed it. But I don't think the best team won, unfortunately. I thought England were the best team.
All right, Moss, a pleasure as always. Thanks for taking our call today.
Very good, Roy.
Always a pleasure talking to Moss Finn. Very, very knowledgeable about the game. Very, very passionate about the game. And always great to have him on air. Right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to talk darts. The BDO World Masters Champion, John O'Shea, joined us in the studio earlier on today.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. The Big Red Bench.
And second half underway in the Watford and Chelsea game. Chelsea's still leading by a goal to nil thanks to that Tammy Abraham goal after 5 minutes. A reminder of the competition on the show tonight as well. We're running a mascot competition for the Ireland under-17s who play 3 games in Turner's Cross over the next week or so. They play Andorra Tuesday the 12th. They play Montenegro Friday the 15th and Israel on Monday the 18th. So if you would like your child to be a mascot for one of the games, text in your name and address which game you prefer to 086-8104-106. 086-8104-106. So just text in your name and address and the game you prefer to 086-8104-106 and your child could be leading Ireland out at Turner's Cross over the next week. It's going to be a fantastic week. 3 fantastic games for the under-17s and Cork, and Colin O'Brien, of course, the Ireland manager as well. So really looking forward to that. All right, we are going to talk darts, and John O'Shea was crowned the BDO Masters Champion at last weekend. Fantastic achievement for the Corkman who's been on our show a couple of times. So delighted to have John O'Shea in the studio with us today. World Masters Champion, following your name.
Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You know, who would have thought that from Cork, like?
Yeah.
You know? World Masters Champion. I mean, the names on that trophy synonymous with darts, like.
Yeah.
You know?
And now you're one of them.
And I'm one of them. It is absolutely brilliant, Rory. You know, it is. I can't believe it, like.
Just take us back. Like, your interview on Eurosport afterwards, you were quite emotional and said that you didn't even know if you could play that week because your leg was at you. And yeah. So, I mean, like, it was a tough battle just to get through hockey, really.
It was. You know, I didn't get the preparation in that I was hoping for running up to the World Masters because of the Achilles tendon. Mm. You know, it wasn't healing as fast as I was hoped it would heal. But a few days off the building site, and you know, and we went a day early to England, and it felt fine. It felt fine over there, you know.
Mm. And it didn't affect you too much, so.
No, it didn't. As a matter of fact, it was probably 95% better than it was for the last few months. Like, you know, I was really struggling. Like, you know what I mean? Look, the doctor told me that I needed to come off it for a few weeks, but unfortunately, you know the way the world works. Yeah, you can't afford to come out of work for 5 or 6 weeks and put it up. Like, you know, mortgages have to be paid and everything and whatnot that comes with it. Like, you know, so we just carried on. We just carried on as normal.
So it obviously didn't affect you too much. Make the emotion afterwards. You could just see how much it meant to you.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it was like the monkey off the back. You know, it's I got there. Mm. You know, for like, I've been playing darts well in excess of 20 years now. Like, you know, from local level when I started with the lads in Vincent's and in St. Vincent's Hurling Football Club, like, and then playing around Cork with doubles pairing on Martin Cotter and winning trophies with the CDO and whatnot over the last few years, and then I took it to the next level, which was county level, and from there it was international level, and you know, I've had a few spells over in the UK learning how to do it like their way, you know what I mean? Like, because like, you basically at the end of the day, you got to take on the British because they basically ruled the roost for many years, like with the likes of Phil Taylor and Dave Chisnell and James Wade and all these top dart players, you know. So, and then you had Phil Taylor who retired, and Michael Van Gerwen now, who's the world number one in the PDC, like. But then you have on the BDO where it all started for all these fellas before the breakaway, you know, which was at Lakeside, you know. And as you know, I've been here with you before, like when we got to the quarterfinals of the World Masters 3 years ago, when I got to play Wolfie Adams on stage, which was brilliant again because it was an iconic stage. And then they moved to the Circus Tavern, where that's an iconic stage, you know.
Synonymous with darts, isn't it?
So the stages are getting bigger, you know. So like in a few weeks' time, it's the Indigo at the O2 in London, you know. So yeah, the stages are getting bigger.
That's the first year it's not in Lakeside, is it?
It's the first time it's not in Lakeside. Yeah, new sponsors, new venues. Look, I suppose the game has moved on.
Yeah,
you know, people need bigger venues. People are like, darts is huge now. Mm. It's like the money in the game is huge. Like, so, like, there's a lot of, how would you put it? There's a lot of opportunities now for the youths. You know, the youths in Cork, the youths around the country. Like, I mean, like, we have massive, massive talent. Like, I mean, like, we won 3 world titles last weekend.
Mm.
Katie Sheldon from Dublin, 15-year-old, she won the girls World Masters, and then you had Kian Barry, who is just phenomenal at the moment. Like, the sky is the limit for him, like, you know, and he's a smashing down the ground, you know. He's a smashing lad, like, and I wish him all the best. Like, he is 1 or 2 world championship games coming up over the next few months, like, and he's just huge, like. And of course you have our own Kieran Tien in Cork as well. Like, that Kieran was with me at the weekend and he got to the quarterfinals, you know. So like, it's good for Cork and it's good for Ireland.
So the game's in a good state. So
there's an awful lot to be said for the way the INDO have approached it over the last few years with the youths and bringing the youths to to the likes of Turkey for the Youth World Cup, and you know, and it's you know, years ago they probably didn't get that. We wouldn't have got those opportunities when I was growing up as a youth player, you know, because darts was, I suppose, always classed as the pub game, you know. But yeah, it's after getting really, really big now, and it's big all over the world. Like, I mean, in Asia with the soft tip, you know, it's just massive amount of money. Like,
even Cork now, following your win, is probably the popularity is going to probably explode again.
Do you know, I was down in Blackpool doing a bit of shopping when we came home there recently, and the amount of people that stopped me, and they were wondering, without the Joker shirt, is that John? Is that him? Is that him? You know? And you're there, and you can hear them, you can actually hear them saying it, like, yeah, and then they get closer and closer. Oh, tis him, tis him, tis him.
So you're a proper celebrity now, so.
Well, do you know what? It's funny in a way, Rory, you know what I mean? Like, that people, you know, you can see the lift and the smile in their faces. Mm. Like, you know, one of our lads from Farnry, you know, is now world champion. You know, yeah. It's you know, you can't write these scripts. No, like,
you can't. You certainly can't. Take us back. The final, going into the final, were you nervous at all? Were nerves a factor?
Do you know? I tell you, and I'll be brutally honest with you. I had no nerves at all.
Yeah.
I just felt I was at ease with myself and my game. You know, I've had worked so hard over the years, like the 4 to 5 hours, 7 days a week. You know. Come in after rugby, come in after gymnastics, come in after work. And I still managed to get myself and motivate myself to get on the board, even though I hadn't played a whole lot of darts in Cork. Something had to give. I couldn't afford to go out on a Monday night and play local darts and then head away for the weekend up the country to play for the rankings and then maybe throw in a BDO event, maybe in Malta or something like that. Something had to go. You know, so I said, look, We'll put the money away. We'll stay in. We'll put the money away. We'll save enough money to get to Malta, or we'll save enough money to get to Italy, play the Open, and we'll see how we go from there. And that was the plan. Like, some couldn't do it all.
There's only so many hours in the day.
There's only so many hours in a day, and there's only so much you can do with work. Like, because Laura's a nurse and I'm a plumber. You know what I mean? Like, and it's just, and then the kids, and they have their sports. You know. Like Kelly plays basketball, Jake and Kenneth play rugby, Maisie's in the gymnastics. Do you know what I mean? And I play the darts. Yeah. And then we fit everything in a week.
Yeah. So a lot to fit in, all right.
Yeah.
So nerves just wasn't an issue.
Nerves, I was at ease with the game. Like, going into that final, I was at ease. I was like Scott Waite's, like, you know, 2 times world champion. He's already won the World Masters.
Had you played him before?
Would you believe it? I have never played him before.
Yeah.
In the years now, I've played BDO darts now over 3 or 4 years, here and there, events, you know, and we've never met. We've actually avoided one or in every single draw. Like, and that was the first time playing him in a World Masters final. Was the first time to play each other. So, look, I know who Scott Waite's of. He knows who I was as well, but obviously he didn't know what I was capable of doing because we had never played before. But he would have known from that week and from previous, like, I mean, a semi-final in Malta, quarter-finals in Malta the year before, you know, last 32 of the Scottish Open, last 128 of the Dutch Open. I mean, the Dutch Open, 7,500 entries, the biggest open-run tournament in the world, with 120 dartboards, down to the last 128, you know. You know you're playing well when you're doing things like that. Like, yeah, you'd love to go a little bit further than 128, like, you know. But
so you were kind of the underdog a little bit, so going in, pressure maybe off you a bit.
I was definitely the underdog. Yeah, he deserved. He even though I probably at that time I think I had posted the highest tournament average. But yeah, look, I mean, that was in a different game as well. Like, you know, but Scott Waite's is. He's a different animal, like, you know. And I showed him respect as well on the stage, you know what I mean? And he deserved it. But there's a certain element of, you know, he'll still talk to me after the game, win or lose, like, you know what I mean?
Like, he's a nice fella, yeah.
Yeah, so right now, he's in my way of making me a hero back home.
Like, yeah.
And that was it, like, and the nerves, I just felt at ease. You know, it's probably hard to describe it. Like, I normally get the butterflies in the stomach and a bit of adrenaline running, like, you know what I mean? Like, but I just knew that. I just knew at some stage in that final that I was going to win. And that was the only time throughout the whole tournament that I actually dreamt a little bit and said, I'm going to win. You know?
Was that when you went 5-4 up, or?
Do you know what? I ran into a 2-set lead. And I was 1-0 up in the third set, and I lost the third set I probably shouldn't have lost. And I could have been 3 sets up. That could have been quite dangerous, because then I probably might have relaxed a bit more than I already was, and maybe got complacent. And that's what actually happened for that split moment there, that 5-minute spell where I actually thought, and then all of a sudden I found myself, it's 2-all. And I said, right, forget about it now. till after you win. Or if you win, you know what I mean? Like, the bottom line here is that Scott Waites is a very dangerous dart player. I mean, a few years back, he was 8-0 down to James Wade in the Grand Slam final and rattled off 10 legs, straight 10 legs. Like, so this is the calibre of dart player you're playing against. Like, you know, it doesn't matter how far behind he is, he's still good enough to rattle off 3 or 4 sets one after the other with a few 11s and a few 12 dart legs. And then you're out in the back and you're saying to yourself, what just happened there? You know? So I've learned a bit from that, from the last time on stage with Jamie Hughes. I've learned a bit from that, you know. So
it gets down to when you've 3 darts in your hand at double 10 to win. What's that feeling like?
That double 10 was like Cork Harbour. The only thing on
that... You must
have
hit that tens of thousands of times. Like.
Oh, how many times have I thrown my hands in the air in the kitchen pretending to be a world champion, you know? Yeah. As silly as it might sound, but look, who hasn't done it, like, you know what I mean? But... I just saw the red. I just saw that red bit and there was nothing else I could see. That whole dartboard was double 10. I could not miss it. And the minute I left my hand, I knew it was in.
Yeah.
You know? And what can you say? You know, it's even now, near almost like a week later kind of thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it still hasn't hit home, like, you know, as much. It's just the magnitude of the whole lot of it, like, you know, me, Farnery boy, you know, taking on the best in the world in the BDO and winning a World Masters title. Like,
it's not overstating to say it's a life-changing moment. Life-changing
it is for me and it is for my family, you know. I have a very young family, like, and even my brothers and sisters, all their kids, like, they're all the same age, like, you know. And for my mum and dad, like, I mean, they've put up with it for as long as I can remember, as long as I'm playing darts, you know. But for the kids, it was huge. Like, it's life changing for them as well. Like, because even where they go now, back into school Monday, you know,
your dad's the world champion.
Dad's a world champion. Even out at the rugby there now this morning, like, you know, we were all the kids were coming up. Well done, well done, well done. Well, you know, it brings a smile to people's faces. You know, and the kids watched it, like, and you know, they'd loved every minute of it. And just to be like, I'm still John O'Shea, I'm not going to change. Do you know what I mean? I was still out at rugby this morning freezing. You know, I go again, you know. This is what it's about, like. It won't change me at all, you know.
And you don't really have time to, I suppose, let it change you, because you said you're so busy with B, you're back in action in January as well.
Well, this is it, like. I mean, like, we're off now next week to Killarney for the Irish Open. That's a huge tournament for Ireland, because it's the first time Irish darts has brought a BDO world rank tournament to Ireland.
Yeah.
It's a Category A tournament, €28,000 in prize money, you know. So it's a big undertaking. As far as I know, the last time I checked, it was 374 entries in the mint. So yeah, and they're all coming over for it. You know, Tony O'Shea and Andy Hamilton have landed in Ireland a week ahead of schedule for a few exhibitions around the country. There's a lot of big names in that now, like, you know. So, and it'll be my first appearance on a dartboard since I won, like, you know, which is very soon, you know. Very normally there's a few weeks, but because of the time it was that I won, and the Irish Open with only a week or two afterwards, you know. So I'm looking forward to Killarney, like, and then I think I have Italy or Malta at the end of November before I run into the O2 there. So there'll be plenty of darts now thrown in the next few weeks.
Certainly will. Like, practising, obviously, you know, over Christmas and all that kind of crack, like, doesn't bother you, doesn't?
No, I have a set routine. Do you know, when I was able to practise proper, I have a set routine that I do over 3 hours, you know. And, like, it's grand and handy now because Jake and Kenny can play the game as well.
Yeah.
You know, so they give you that time in between the dartboard. Like, it gets very monotonous when you're throwing at a dartboard on your own. You're up and you're back, you're throwing up, take them out, back down around. But when there's someone that you can practice with, and it, the motion of waiting for your turn to throw while he takes his darts out of the board, like, it's a proper practice, you know what I mean? Like, they're improving all the time as well. Keeps them off the PlayStation.
Anything that does that is a good
idea.
It's
a bonus, yeah.
It certainly is. John, it's been a pleasure having you in, buddy. Congratulations. Absolutely delighted for you.
Thanks a million, Rory. Cheers, buddy.
Always great having John O'Shea in the studio. Could have talked to that man for the entire afternoon. Congratulations to him on being crowned BDO Masters champion. It's certainly a life-changing moment for him.
And congratulations indeed to John. Absolutely delighted for him. All right, just going to get you up to date on some Premier League stuff. Chelsea 2-0 up away to Watford. Tammy Abraham with the first, Christian Pulisic with the second for Chelsea. That'll see them into third place at the expense of Leicester City. And they are 8 points behind leaders Liverpool. Could this is then a title challenge? Remains to be seen, but Frank Lampard certainly doing a terrific job with that young Chelsea team. All right, just one final reminder of our mascot competition before we get out of here at 7 o'clock. We have teamed up with the FEI, and we want to find mascots for the Ireland under 17 games, which are happening at Turner's Cross. They face Andorra on Tuesday the 12th, Montenegro Friday the 15th, and Israel on Monday the 18th. They're all in Turner's Cross, as the boys in green continue or go in search of three wins in Cork, which would be absolutely fantastic. Of course, Cork's Colin O'Brien is in charge of the under 17 team. So if you would like your child to be a mascot for one of the games, text in your name and address, which game you prefer as well, to 086 8104 106, 086 8104 106, and your child could be leading out the boys in green at Turner's Cross. What a fantastic moment that could be. Alright, just before we wrap up, going to hear briefly from Razi Rasmus after the former Munster man helped South Africa to win the World Cup this morning by beating England. Going to hear from the captain Si Khaleesi as well.
Now for us as a South African team, we decided long before the rugby championships already, we're going to, I wouldn't call it sacrifice, but we decided that we have to be 20 weeks together if we want to have a chance of winning it, just because we're so far behind the other teams in terms of building a squad to be competitive at the World Cup. So we didn't see it as a sacrifice, we saw it as a massive honour to try and win it for South Africa. And now this is week 19. And week 20 was always the trophy tour in South Africa, and that will be next week. So we're very proud of making it. We know there was a lot of luck involved during the way getting here, but we're so proud, not just because we won the trophy, but because we're South Africans, and a lot of people thought we'd never make it, and we just believe South Africans never give up, and that makes us really proud.
It's really, I think Coach said it earlier, how proud we are as South Africans, and we know how many people didn't give us a chance, but we had to believe in each other as a team and the people around and the plan. And, you know, he kept on telling us how good we are, but, you know, and it drove us to work hard and it drove us to places we haven't been before. And, yeah, it was special for all of us, and I've never seen such support from our people back at home. And I honestly don't think we could have done it without them, you know. And, you know, everywhere we saw those videos, people sending videos, people coming together. It was really beautiful for us to see. And, yeah, it was awesome to have my dad here. Really grateful that I could share this moment with him. It means a lot to me and my best friend, obviously, for me. And, yeah, it's just an absolutely amazing day for all of us. I can't say any more than that.
Just we have a habit of winning the World Cup every 12 years, and you're a young coach and you're still in the job or running the team now for the next 4 years. We don't have to wait 12 years for the next World Cup, do we? I mean, you're going to challenge again and soon.
No, Gavin, our big thing is that when I took over 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, it was 618 days till the World Cup, and we planned to the World Cup, to try and win the World Cup. I think it's now 614 days to the British and Irish Lions, and we'll start planning now for the British and Irish Lions, because that's the next, obviously we've got the rugby championships next year and the normal super rugby and all the normal local competitions, but I think it's 614 days or some close to that before the British and Irish Lions land in South Africa. So we'll start planning for that now. The big thing for us is what we are trying to do is to be consistent now. I think what Eddie's done with England, when they won 23 out of 24 games, you know, they were starting to be consistent, and what Warren did with Wales, were being consistent.
That's right, Razi Erasmus there, the former Munster man, speaking after helping South Africa win the World Cup this morning, and a fantastic performance indeed from them. All right, we are out of time. Thanks very much indeed for tuning our way. Thanks to Dara DC, Killian Dennis O'Sullivan, and Patrick O'Flaherty for texting in. Their kids have won the mascot competition, so they'll be leading out the boys in green at Turner's Cross for the under 17 European Championship qualifiers. Congratulations indeed. We're back tomorrow from 6 p.m. Enjoy rest of your night. Stevie G is up next. Podcast online shortly.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.